Hello and welcome to Islanders Anxiety from the Lighthouse Hockey Podcast Network. My name is Dan Saracini. Joining me this Sunday evening via Zencaster is my friend Michael Leboff. And Mike, the Islanders had a chance to face the Capitals directly for first place in the division and promptly pissed all over themselves and now sit third behind the Caps and Penguins after a pathetic display over the course of two games in which they played maybe a pretty good period and a half, I want to say, to be generous, but not a good showing for the Islanders in the last couple of games, and it's really infuriating.
Yeah, that first period in the 1-0 shootout loss, the double shutout, was so encouraging because of the performance it came on the heels of, which is a good showing as the Rangers, that's what makes what happened on Saturday night, where everybody except for, what, two players, maybe Adam Pellick and I don't know, J.G. Peugeot. Well, the Peugeot line has been good. So we'll say that Bailey, Peugeot, Beauvillier, like, they've been good. But outside of those three and Pellick, Pollock, like everyone else, like you said, promptly wet themselves. And it's weird because the name of the show is Islanders Anxiety. And this is, a little off-brand. It would be better for Islanders Serenity. But, like, I'm not terribly worried about the Islanders themselves just because we have seen, like, the team – we know what this team can be, right? We know that they can be an elite, play like an elite team. Like, sometimes they look like the Tampa Bay Lightning. Look, I remember all these years of watching teams like the Lightning, or going back to like when the Blackhawks and Kings were really good, and being like, wow, like there's just such a difference between the way that these really, really good teams play and the Islanders play when they were like kind of like just a scrappy upstart or they were bad. And then, you know, in the first year under Trotz, you started to see that team and it's really developed into like a team where, you know, other fans, when they watch Islander games, like, I wish my team would play like that. I have a friend who's a Montreal Canadiens fan, and his friends are always texting him, and he'll send me a screenshot like, we should play more like the Islanders. Why can't we play more like the Islanders? And the problem right now is the Islanders aren't playing like the Islanders that much, or on a consistent enough basis, but you know, it's there. And my hope, and I'm giving the benefit of the doubt to Barry Trotz, who obviously deserves more benefit of the doubt than anybody I've ever, maybe in my entire life. Like, this guy, he can do whatever he wants. And I will still say, you know, like, trust him, and you got to just live with his little kind of weird lineup decisions because the big picture is just so good. But I'm hoping, and I'm willing to look at the silver lining, which is he's trying to figure out the right form of this team going down the stretch and into the playoffs. Like, and it certainly hasn't revealed itself yet. Like, we can say for certain that the Travis Zajac experiment with Matt Barzal and Jordan Eberle is gets an F. Like, that's not going to work. The Leo Komarov experiment seems like it's working a little bit, but there's still other like things that he can tinker with, and I'm expecting to see down the line. So, like, if this continues, this pattern of, okay, they look really good for a period and then really bad for a period, and then lose, it continues like into the playoffs, and I'm going to be a little sad just because we're going to watch them squander a great season, probably in the first round, because the other teams in the division are good. We're not going to get a free pass in round one. So like, I'm willing to kind of sit back, wait and see, what happens, but it's at the same time, like, they gotta like get it sorted. Within what the next, we've got what, like 8 games left, 9 games, like they gotta get it sorted within like the next 4 so that they can pick up some form going into the tournament.
Yeah, you're a much more patient man than I am, which explains why you're able to win money in sports betting, and I am just like, yeah, I know that's probably not a good idea for me, because I get a little bit emotional during these games. I closed my laptop as soon as Evgeny Kuznetsov scored the 5-3 goal last night, and I was like, I can't take this anymore. I'm not going to watch these guys piss away another period. And so I hope you're right. I hope that there is some tinkering going on. I think I agree with you, and I think a lot of other people would, that the Zajac first line experiment didn't work. I saw somebody, you know, made a comment at Lighthouse Hockey saying, you know, the trade itself was fine. I don't think anybody expected Travis Zajac to be their first line center after the trade deadline. It's like, that's part of the problem, is that he's there. And, you know, we all complained about Leo Komarov being there, but if you give Zajac an F in that spot, I mean, maybe Leo is like a D plus, I guess, maybe a C minus, you know? So like, you know, it's not great, but it's there. And hopefully there's some more tinkering left to do. The Islanders do have 8 games left. They have 1 game against the Capitals. The format of this episode, by the way, we're going to do a little bit differently. We're going to talk about the 2 games against the Capitals that they just played right now. And then in the second half, we're going to talk about the much better game they played last week against the Rangers and what that means going forward as they play the Rangers again next week. And so they have 8 games left, 1 more against the Capitals, 2 against the Rangers, Sabres, and Devils. I'm going to mention those games again in a minute. And then 1 more against the Bruins. And that's it. And then the playoffs begin. And I mean, at this point, you know, nothing is locked up. There's no X next to the Islanders. But I mean, it's fairly safe to assume that they will be a playoff team. And so Butch Goring made the point in Saturday night's broadcast that the Islanders playing for position in this scenario, in this season, really doesn't matter that much because you know who you're going to be playing. It's either going to be the Bruins, Capitals, or Penguins. My counter argument is it matters a hell of a lot because those teams are going to go in there wanting to take you out. And if you have lost to all of them in recent succession badly, they know that they can. And especially losing home ice advantage, also not a good deal. So I get what Butch is trying to say. Butch always tries to be pretty positive, but I respectfully disagree with that. And I would have liked to have seen the Islanders win at least one of these 2 games that they just played, and they lost them both. Like you mentioned before, one was a 1-0 shootout loss. They were great in the first period, absolutely terrible in periods 2 and 3. Semyon Varlamov was fantastic, and he got beat by 2 shootout goals. Hey, what are you going to do? And you know, the score itself didn't really bother me so much as the fact that the Islanders didn't play for 2 periods. And then Saturday night's game, they lost 6-3, which is, again, being generous. They were down 2-0, like 4 minutes into the game. Alex Ovechkin didn't even play. And I hate to say this, but like, I knew they were going to lose the minute I knew he wasn't going to be in the game, because this happens every single time. He's not in the game. Oh, this is great. There's one less huge guy to worry about. And then they just absolutely, the wheels come off and they just don't want to play the rest of the other 21 Capitals on the team, whatever. And so guys like Nick Dowd and Garnet Hathaway all of a sudden turn into Yvon Cornwallier and Jacques Lemaire, and they're skating all over the ice and making the Islanders look stupid. And it was infuriating. And they got 2 power play goals. They got an awesome shorthanded goal from Adam Pellick, who's got the best non-Matt Barzell goal of the season, I think, so far this season for the Islanders. But that's where the positivity ends. And you know, you're looking at yet another terrible game played after the trade deadline, in which you thought, most people thought, most people even outside of us, thought the Islanders made the right move. They picked up 2 guys that looked like they were going to help. Okay, they also picked up Braden Coburn. And since then, they've been absolutely terrible. And it's really, you know, I hope you're right. I hope Barry Trotz is tinkering. But even if he is, he's got to settle on a lineup soon, because the playoffs are going to start around the corner. And you can't go in playing as poorly as the Islanders have and expect to come out of round 1 as a victor, because it's just not going to happen.
Right, yeah. And the reason I am like a little calm is because there are seemingly solutions to the problem, which is, you know, I think right now the Islanders have one line that has been consistent through this little stretch, which is, it always seems to be the JG Pageau line. You know, whenever the Islanders like tinker with their lineup or someone gets hurt, whoever ends up playing with JG Pageau in the middle is the line that ends up being like, oh, this line's working. For some reason, he's just the most versatile guy in the world. He can play with anybody. And right now it's Josh Bailey and Anthony Beauvillier. And so if you think about that line being kind of set in stone at the moment, and then you got Nelson Palmieri, they seem to be fine together. The third man on that line right now, Michael Dalcola, is playing fine too, but he obviously can come in and out of the lineup. He's someone who does stuff that helps, but he's never going to score at a second line winger rate. So you can move him up and
or
down
any
the lineup.
Line winger rate, yeah. For that matter.
Like, to me, I love him. Like, we all love him because of like, has there been a funkier career in the NHL's, like in this modern era of the NHL, than his? Like, 5th overall pick, a guy who came, who I remember where I was when they drafted him. That was the Ekblad draft. I was bartending at Buckley's in Valley Stream, and I'm watching. I'm like, oh, Michael Dalcola. He was basically the consensus number 5 pick by everybody.
100% consensus pick to the Islanders.
And they all talked about his shot. They were like, this guy, his skating is going to take some time to catch up, but he's got a great shot and he's got a great nose for the net. I don't know what happened. Because usually when that happens, like, think about Oliver Wahlstrom. Like, when he was drafted, he had the kind of the same scouting report. Was great shot, and his skating isn't at an NHL level yet. He's probably got to pick up like a little bit more hockey sense, and if he can, he's going to be a weapon because he can turn the game on a dime with that shot, which we've seen him do plenty. Whereas Dal Colle, it's like it's completely kind of inverted, where he's now, if he could ever find a shot, he could be a really good NHL player because he does everything else kind of well. But to like we can talk about the lineup. Barry Trotz obviously doesn't listen to anybody besides himself, maybe, and maybe a couple of his guys in the war room. But like Dal Colle can come in and out. He can play basically anywhere on the line in the lineup. I frankly would love to see him replace Cal Clutterbuck on the fourth line and hopefully like Oliver Wahlstrom at one point come in. But like the point I'm making is like Palmieri and Nelson seem to be fine together. Brock Nelson's looked really good lately. He's one of a few guys, but it's the first line that is not clicking. And for this team to work in the playoffs, like that needs to change. Like they need to alleviate the burden on Matt Barzal and Jordan Eberle to an extent. Like the two of them, they need help. And if this team is to go anywhere, that help should be coming from a guy who's not Travis Ajak. And Leo Komarov's been fine. And maybe in the right matchup that works, like when you're playing a team that doesn't handle forechecking as well, like their defense can't move the puck, don't have great puck movers in the back, like fine. But you're not going to really run into those teams in the playoffs because usually those teams don't make the playoffs. So like at some point it's going to like the rubber needs to hit the road where this team's going to need to get the top six, especially that top line, working much more consistently, because the rest of the lineup will be fine. Like the fourth line hasn't been great either, but you'd expect them to do their job at least when the playoffs come around, and they'll play their 12 minutes. They'll hopefully not get burned like they've been getting burned lately, but like the team itself is like, it's there, and it's like, it shouldn't be this complicated to put it together. And I'm hoping in my own head that the reason it hasn't is because Barry Trotz doesn't really want to give whoever, the Bruins, Penguins, or Capitals, tape on Matt Barzal playing with Oliver Wahlstrom or Matt Barzal playing with Kyle Palmieri or whoever's going to end up being that first line winger in the playoffs, because I'm going to be extremely, extremely scared. Mm-hmm. Like, so behind the sofa scared if Travis Ajak and Leo Komarov are still up there when we take on whoever in round one of the playoffs. And so like it's a really strange time to be watching this team, because look, like they're basically 99% to make the playoffs. So the results really don't matter as much. Like, yes, seeding and home ice advantage matter, but like Butch's point, the difference between who the opponent is really, really negligible right now. Like really negligible. These, you could put the Penguins in the Bruins uniforms and put them, have them play the Islanders, and be like, this might be the Bruins or it might be the Penguins. The same goes as the Capitals. All these teams play pretty similar style hockey. It reminds me of like the old Pacific Division with like the Ducks, the Sharks, and the Kings. You're like, I don't know who is on which team, but they all play the same exact style of hockey. And so it's like, it's not the results that really matter too much, but the process needs to get better. And you hope that at some point when it's clear that something isn't working, that things change pretty quickly, like, because it definitely didn't work against that Capitals game. And it really didn't work in the first Capitals game in the second half. So we're looking at like five periods now, four and a half periods of bad Islanders. And hopefully they respond with a win that would truly, put them right back in the race for the first place in the division against the Capitals. Because to their credit, when they do really hit rock bottom, like the next game they do come out, it's just that they don't carry that momentum forward into the second game after they bottom out.
Yeah, right. I mean, right now, I mean, it's safe to say that the first and fourth lines aren't working, period. Like, you can see signs of life from lines two and three. Again, I thought Nelson has looked pretty good with Palmieri. Basically anybody you put next to JG Pageau is going to look pretty good, like, because he's just constantly trying to set people up. And right now, that the recipient of that is really Josh Bailey. I wouldn't mind seeing, again, it's not like Barry Trotz listened to us, but I wouldn't mind seeing Dal Colle get a run on that first line just to see what happens. I mean, what's the point? Like, if you're going to play two guys in Komarov and Zajac that don't offer a whole lot in terms of offense anyway, why not go for the guy who really doesn't offer any in offense, but is willing to do all those kinds of heavy things that they don't do that well in Dal Colle? I also, like a lot of other people, would like to see Oliver Wahlstrom get that chance, because I think whatever defensive deficiencies he might have, and he probably has some, I'm sure, I think Barzal and Eberle are pretty good about it, so I think they'd be able to compensate. But regardless of what that is, if those two lines aren't working, we're looking at a very, very short stay in the playoffs for the Islanders. The fourth line this year has been really kind of disappointing. I don't know what it is. There's definitely something wrong with them, and they definitely haven't looked their same, particularly these last two games. And the worst part of it is that Cizikas he's definitely the most important and talented guy on that entire line, and he's the only guy who's a UFA this year. So, you know, beyond just the fact that they aren't playing that well, you do wonder about where it's going to go from here on out. I'm looking at Natural Stat Trick right now, and I'm looking at, you know, the sort of team's full list here since April 7th, which was when the Islanders acquired Kyle Palmieri. So this is a week or so before the trade deadline. And a couple of things stand out. So right now, the Islanders are 17th in the NHL in expected goals for, 14.97, just below the Detroit Red Wings. The Red Wings, they're below the Red Wings in terms of expected goals for. Things don't get much better if you look at expected goals for percentage. They are all 20th. So they're at 47.26%. Again, behind guys like the Kings and the Senators. Like, the Senators have a higher expected goals for percentage right now than the Islanders do. But, you know, the Islanders, their whole thing is high danger chances for, right? Like, that's what they do. Isn't that their bread and butter? Sure it is. Normally they're like in the top three in the NHL. Currently, high danger chances for percentage, the Islanders are 20th, 46%, like just below 47%. So they're not even getting 50% of the high danger chances in their games right now, which is a sign of the team not playing as well as they normally would and not playing their style. A couple of points in their favor right now, though. Shooting percentage, right now, Islanders dead last in the NHL at 5.10%. So just above 5% is what they're shooting. And frankly, nobody's going to win it like that. The Flyers are right above them. The Canadiens are above them, who are also struggling right now. 3 and 4 in the NHL right now as far as shooting percentage goes. Penguins and Capitals. Penguins just shy, just above 11%. Caps just above 10%. And so that's a huge difference there, 5% versus 11%. And then PDO, which, you know, we've come to kind of shooting percentage plus save percentage. Right now, the Islanders are 6th from the bottom. They are 25th in the NHL at 972. So, you know, there's a couple of things there that show that the Islanders aren't doing what they normally need to do. Again, the high danger chances for, expected goals for, like, these are normally things that the Islanders are pretty good at, and right now they're very bad at them. Their shooting percentage is also pretty low, and they're not a high shooting percentage team generally speaking, but man, it's very hard to win when you're only scoring on 5% of the shots that are going in. And their save percentage is fine, like, that, you know, they've been pretty good. Ilya Sorokin had a very, very bad game on Saturday night, but, you know, talking about things that you don't feel too worried about, I mean, that's what, his like third or fourth bad game of the season. So I'm not too worried about him. I don't know why he was so bad. A couple of those goals, in particular, the first one by Garnet Hathaway, I got the one by Kuznetsov later. Like, those are goals you got to have, especially now down the stretch. So, you know, it just sucks. Like, it sucks that they're doing this. And you know, again, I don't want to say that their playoff spot is guaranteed right now, because it's not. It would take an epic collapse and an epic rise for the Rangers to get there. And so it seems pretty locked up, but, you know, you just can't do this before the playoffs. Like, you just can't. You can't be playing this poorly. And I don't know what the reason is for it. Even Barry Trotz looked kind of confused by it after that in the post game last night. It was like a minute long. He didn't seem to have any answers. He wasn't at his little table that he usually sits at. So I don't know what was going on. Maybe he was annoyed by that, but this is just not where we thought we'd be after the trade deadline. And, you know, the first couple of games, you get it. We're into like, we're going to come into week three now, and they're going to have to play the Capitals again. And it's just, this is not, you know, this team's window is right now. Like, they can't afford to just be like, well, I guess that didn't work. I'll see you next season. Like, it doesn't really work that way. You know, this team is built for right now. And so this is the opportunity now, and to see them just kind of throw it away like this is really, really hard to watch. It's just, you know, I don't know. Makes me not want to watch, to be quite honest.
It really is going to, we should know, I think, you know, what to expect from this team in the next week or two before we get into the playoffs, because history shows when the teams that go on runs in the playoffs are the teams that have those good last 15 game stretches of the regular season. And the Islanders are kind of, yeah, like you said, they're dangerously they're in danger of like coughing that up. And that doesn't mean that when the clock ticks to whatever, that they decide to start the playoffs May 15th or whatever, that they can't find their legs, but they can. But it just makes it harder, especially because we are seeing the other teams really collect themselves and start to play. Like, the Capitals looked like a playoff team last night.
Yeah, for sure.
The Bruins have looked like a playoff team since, you know, they got Taylor Hall, which is a funny thing. It's like, you know, the Bruins and the Islanders are similar in that their team defined by structure and like they have a true identity. So you think that introducing someone like Taylor Hall to the mix would take some time. Because that's what it's been taking time for the Islanders with Palmieri and Zajac, but it hasn't. It completely like reinvigorated and changed that team season. And then, yeah, the Penguins have been rolling for 20. I think they have the second best record in the NHL over the last 25 games behind the Avalanche. So they're also in playoff mode. So of the four teams, playoff teams in the East, the Islanders are kind of the only one that are wobbling at the moment. That's what I'm frightened about. That's what I was saying before. Like, I'm not like, I know that there is a good team here and we could still see it, but it is the kind of extenuating circumstances that are more frightening to me than just what we've seen over the last week or so. Teams ebb and flow in the regular season, and you hope that at some point the Islanders ebb back, and they could, like they, like you said, that their schedule kind of opens up for them right before the playoffs. So as like skeptical as we'll be if the Islanders just run roughshod through the Sabres and Devils to kind of complete the season, and we'll be like, well, you know, it was against these two terrible teams playing out the string. Like it could be a good time for them to get back to their game. Because a couple weeks ago, I was hoping that those games would be like this. Oh, that's a great time to rotate guys out and keep them fresh before.
That's when I would have thought that the experimentation would have begun.
Right. But now they just don't have that luxury anymore, unfortunately. And we'll talk, like, because there has been good. Like, there's been good things since the deadline. And I think, like, we've talked about when the Islanders acquired Kyle Palmieri, that he has been playing good hockey, but he just the pucks aren't going in for him, and that seems to have carried over for the Islanders for his stint with the Islanders. Like he's getting chances. One thing he does well is he gets the puck to the net. Like it's very similar to Wahlstrom. Like he's got a good shot and gets the puck to the net, that creates rebounds and a little bit of chaos in front of the net, and that stuff will come in handy in the playoffs. You just want to see more go in, more pucks go in. I think I can't remember what game it was. I guess it was against the Rangers where he created a great rush and then ended up like stopping his own shot because he was like hanging on the crossbar. So there's some wonky luck, bad poor luck right now too. To things like the Islanders aren't going to shoot 5% for forever, right? That number is going to tick up, and you hope it starts ticking up soon and into the playoffs. What will help that number tick up is creating better scoring chances, which they're not doing. And a lot of that has to do with the first line, which was just an absolute buzzsaw until Lee got hurt. Mm. They like basically were behind just the perfection line of Boston in terms of expected goals. And it's not just about that one line. Like when a line is going that well, what it does is just completely tilts the ice. and creates a domino effect, right? Like if Matt Barzal, Eberle, and Lee were having a great shift, that means that not only did they have a chance to score or draw a penalty, which, you know, never really happens for the Islanders anyways, but like what it does is it just like it tires out whatever line they're playing against, and that slows down a change, and the Islanders can maybe get fresh bodies against the next unit or that unit that's tired and stuff like that. So losing that ability is what I think has kind of been detrimental to this team. And that's what I was saying before about not being terribly worried, because there are still aces in the hole in terms of possible third members of that line, whether it's Wahlstrom, I mean, Dal Colle, or whoever you want to put there. It needs to happen soon, because you need to see the results work before. But if it does click for that first line, the Islanders will snap right back into place. Like you think about the teams that you're frightened of in the playoffs, or you watch in the playoffs and you're like, damn, like the Lightning just sent over Nikita Kucherov, Steven Stamkos, and Andre Palat. They came off, and then Braden Point went on. Like, I'm not saying that the Islanders have that kind of power to their lineup, but like you think about that they can send over Barzal, Eberle, and I don't know, Wahlstrom, and then those guys have a good shift. And then the next thing you got to deal with is Brock Nelson and Kyle Palmieri. Like that's not easy. And that's what the Islanders need to, they need to play to that strength more, which is they do have really good players. Like they have a really good top of the lineup when they're rolling. So that I think it's the frustration for the fans is like there is like a really good lineup here, and we still haven't seen it, which is getting a little frustrating. But like we've doubted Barry Trotz in the past, and we'll talk about the Rangers game where we were doubting him before that game, and he cooked up a different lineup and it just worked. And you know he can do it, and you just hope that it happens, they click and they go. And unfortunately, like we're still in a wait and see mode.
Yeah, I mean, my hope lies in the two games against the Sabres and Devils. But, you know, well, the four games, I should say, against those two. But we'll have to talk about them some other time. Right now, the focus is on the Capitals on Tuesday, and then the Rangers on Thursday and Saturday. We're going to take a break and come back and talk about those two Rangers games and the one that they just played, which Mike just brought up, because it was a good one. It was the only good one of this whole week. Don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes. Leave your Twitter handle in the review itself so you can enter to win some eBay swag. There's still a couple of days left in April, so do that. And then May is our last month of doing this, so if you haven't done it yet, do it now, because that's when the eBay swag train closes. So leave us a review on iTunes, put your Twitter handle in there, and maybe you can win some cool eBay stuff. Okay, give us a minute. We'll be back, and we'll talk Rangers. Blech. Our favorite sponsor is VintageIceHockey.com, where you can get t-shirts, hoodies, and mugs featuring over 100 classic hockey logos. They have hats too, jerseys, all kinds of great stuff. They also have our Al Arbor t-shirt. If you buy one, our portion of which that sale goes directly to the Center for Dementia Research. You can also use the code LIGHTHOUSE15 and save yourself 15%. So go to VintageIceHockey.com today, score yourself some cool stuff as the playoffs are approaching. Okay, so like we said, the Islanders had one good thing happen to them this week, and it was Tuesday night's game against the Rangers, in which they dominated them to the tune of 6-1. You know, it was their most complete game for sure since the trade deadline. It took a while for them to break the ice, but the first guy who scored in the game with about 3 minutes to go in the first period was Josh Bailey. He had been hurt a little bit. And, you know, it's funny, I was looking up Bailey's numbers, and he's got 8 goals and 20 assists, and this was before that game. He ended up with the second one, too. So he had 6 goals going into that game. And, like, you know, he's still third in the league in the team in assists. And, you know, I think he was 5th in points or something like that. And it's like, part of me feels like, yeah, that's probably where Josh Bailey normally is. But it just feels like he's had a very, very quiet season, even for him, who's, like, you know, the most ultimate quiet guy in the entire NHL and has been quiet for his entire career with the Islanders. But he had a really good game, and again, a lot of that I think had to do with playing with JG Pageau as his center. Then the floodgates opened in the second period. Nelson scored from a nice feed from Nick Leddy. Palmieri scored on the power play. Anthony Beauvillier scored right in front of the net, which was another nice goal. The Rangers came back. They got a tip from somebody who kind of sent the puck in from the point. And then the third period, it was all Islanders, and it was great. Pageau scored on a feed from Bailey, and then Bailey scored again later on. Bo had another goal. So that whole line was really working, and it was great. Anthony Beauvillier finished with 4 points. Best game for him in a long time, too. He's always active, but sometimes he doesn't come away with any points. But that time, he really did. And then Jordan Eberle got in on the action, too, with Travis Zajac, who roofed Eberle scored on a roofed backhand feed from Zajac. It was nice setup. And again, 6-1. Varlamov made 25 saves. And it was just a joy to watch. It really was. And, you know, Dom wrote the next day, like, did we just get our team back? Unfortunately, we did not. But it was nice to see what they're capable of. And the best part about it was the Rangers went in, you know, riding a kind of a winning streak, and their playoff percentage had kind of crept up into double digits. And right after that was a very bad night for them. They lost. I think the Penguins and Bruins both won, and it was good night, Irene, at that point. So that was a fun one. Were you at that game by any chance, or did you?
No, my dad was there. And oh, so, there yeah, go. He's been to 2 games this year, and he's seen 14 goals. So because he saw we were at the Capitals game. Yeah. So he texted me saying, I'm kind of getting tired of doing yes, yes, yes. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that was a party. Like, they were rolling. That team was from the second the puck dropped, like, you're like, okay, yeah, like the Islanders are back for a game. And one thing that was actually, I kind of walked away from that game being really encouraged about, was that they did face a little bit of a wobble, a little adversity in the game, which was that last 5 minutes of the second period or so, basically from the time that the Rangers scored the first goal, they pushed for the rest of that second period. And the Islanders were a little lucky, I guess, to escape with a 2-goal lead, but that's what they do. They, when shit hits the fan, like the Islanders, Barry Trotz calls it protocols. Like, they have these protocols they adhere to, and when they do adhere to them, they are, you know, buying themselves a couple extra seconds by sweeping pucks to the corner and beating people to those battles, and chipping pucks out and get at least slowing things down enough to get a change, whatever you want to call it. And it was nice to see them succeed in those instances, because for a long time now, or since, you know, basically the beginning of April, that when stuff kind of goes out of hand, the puck ends up in the back of the Islanders' net. And we talk about that all the time. Like, this is a team that when they make mistakes, like, you can, and it ends up in the back of the net, you need to be worried, because the Islanders are supposed to be able to scramble out of that, out of those mistakes, and like save par or whatever. And then when they did, like, they came out flying in the third period again, and there were a couple of like mesmerizing rushes through the neutral zone. I think it was at the end of the first period, that Pageau goal. First, how awesome is it to have like a guy who's like a legitimate Ranger killer in the lineup? Like, I can't think of anybody who comes to mind that's like been like that, especially because he came from somewhere else. Like, and I remember when we got him, a couple of friends of mine who are Ranger fans were like, dude, I hate that guy. I just hate him because, you know, the 4-goal game he scored or he put together in the playoffs a couple years ago. And he scored his first game ever against the Rangers as an Islander, scores, fights Jacob Trouba, and he's basically been scoring against them ever since. So like, that's awesome. It's just fun to have him in the lineup for those games. But the point being that that game turned looked like it was turning the season around. And actually, like, you go back to that Flyers game, which we talked about last time, that Sorokin stole, I thought that was going to be the mini turning point to the season, because they escaped, they could exhale a little bit, they got 2 very important points, they carried that over into the Ranger game, and it was like, okay, like, maybe we we survived the rope-a-dope a little bit, but that's not been the case. But that's part of the reason that I'm not hitting any panic button, is because of what we saw against the Rangers, who have been as hot as anyone in the NHL lately, and the Islanders were able to put them in their place, frankly. And if they can do that, you know, for more than a period in a game, Like the Islanders are going to be an impossible out in the playoffs, and nobody will want to play them. But like, it's just not been the same. And there's, if you think about the two lineups, like the one we saw against the Rangers and the one we saw against the Capitals, there's really not been, the difference has been negligible, if anything. Like they just have the same players sometimes get their souls sucked out by aliens or something. I don't know what to say. Like it's like, but they've not, it's the same team. So they just need to figure it out, frankly, and play more like that. And we know they can. Like that's the frustrating thing about this is like, we know that this team can hit those heights and they haven't been doing it consistently enough.
It's, and the thing is too, like, and this is, you know, this is some real serious armchair quarterbacking stuff for me. And I hate to do it, but like, you know, we know now from three seasons that yes, there's a game plan and the Islanders have, you know, follow this structure that has been put into place by Barry Trotz and his staff. But like, we also know that a lot of that is down to just straight up effort. Like, you know, when I was on my friend's podcast, the Broad Street Hockey podcast, my friend Kelly, she was like, Flyers fans seem to think that the Islanders are just bigger and rougher than the Flyers are. And they just sort of push their guys around. And you know, they had another guy, Bill, over there, thought that they committed interference on every play. Like, that's the kind of way the Islanders play. And my answer to her was, trust me, they're not much bigger than anybody else in the NHL. If anything, they're smaller and slower. But they're, and it's, I'm not going to disagree that there's not interference on every play, but it's interference with a purpose is what I said to her. Like it's, you know, there's a reason for that. And that's just not happening right now. I mean, getting back to that game against the Capitals on Saturday, like the Caps are just skating through the neutral zone. Like the Islanders weren't even there. And like, that's not how the Islanders play. Whereas you contrast that to how the Rangers game went and the Islanders were in their way. Like the Islanders just didn't let them up from, and you know, if they took the puck, they just took it right back. And like, that's how they play. And so when they get into these modes where, you know, things aren't going right and, you know, okay, look, fine. Their shooting percentage is 5%. That's obviously awful and is not going to stay that way for a long time and it'll get better. But like there's no substitute for not trying to take the puck away from the guy who's got it. And in the games when they're not playing well, the other team just does what they want and the Islanders don't fight back. Against the Caps, they looked slow. They looked like they were just standing around in a lot of places. They just were kind of letting the Caps do what they want. Whereas again, against the Rangers, they looked as fast as the Rangers were, or if not as fast, then smarter and better, you know, more anticipatory. And they knew what they needed to do. They knew where the other guy was going to be. They were predictable in their way, as Barry Trotz also likes to say, and it worked and they just smothered them. And again, that third period, you go back and watch that third period and you're like, you know, this, it was 4-1 at that point. So, I mean, I'm not like the Rangers were going to mount a comeback, but like there was a chance at one point for them to make it 3-2, I believe, or 4-2. And, you know, they managed to get out of there. And if that happens, like, you know, if you go into that period 4-2, like that's, you know, the Rangers can kind of smell a comeback. Not only did they not get that goal, but they also snuffed out any hope the Rangers had for a comeback in that third period by just being on top of them. I don't know how many chances the Rangers had in that period, but it wasn't many. And the Islanders didn't got two goals of their own. And just like, well, this is it now. And so, you know, we rolled to a 6-1 victory. I mean, that's not a feeling we've had a lot, especially in the last couple of weeks. And so a lot of that got just chalked down to effort. I don't know where that effort went on Thursday and Saturday against a team that they're directly chasing into the, you know, playoffs, or even so in the effort in games against the Penguins or those last two games against the Bruins. Like, again, they were just as bad as these two games against the Capitals. Like, where was that team? And it's like, yeah, okay, the Rangers aren't those guys. I get that. But the effort level was a completely different on a completely different level. It wasn't the same at all. So that's what's really frustrating to me is, yeah, I mean, we know that team can play this way. We've seen it happen. We saw it happen all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals last year. And this team, if anything, you know, without Anders Lee, which is a huge problem, is, you know, at least on par. I mean, again, they've got Palmieri there who should be able to at least somewhat replicate what Lee lost. And then you've got guys that are, you know, the same and maybe getting a little bit better, but just not happening. And that's not the way they play. And, you know, when that happens, and I believe Tuesday's game is on NBCSN, if I'm not mistaken. And Now you're looking at a national audience that for the second week, you know, second time in 2 weeks is going to look at this Islanders team. And if they don't show up and actually try, people can be like, what's going on with these guys? I mean, that game against the Flyers that Sorokin stole, you talked about, that was a nationally broadcast game. And Pierre McGuire just tore them a new one tore the entire game long because they stunk. Like, what is going on? And so that's, to me, the most frightening thing is that we saw the effort in one game and then we didn't see it again in two games. And I don't know what's happening. Like, I don't think Barry Trotz is telling these guys, don't worry about it. You know, you don't need to play that hard. Like, he's not telling them that, but that's exactly what they're doing. And he's having a hard time stopping them from doing that. And it bothers me. I mean, as great as that Rangers game was, the next two were just as bad, but it was nice to kind of bask in the joy of that victory all day Wednesday before the Caps came and ruined it. But, it was great. And again, to see their playoff hopes take a huge hit like that was also even better.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, everything about that game was awesome. It was great to put five or six behind Shesterkin. They slowed down Panarin and Zibanejad. It was a great performance. And to the point that the Islanders, like, these other teams kind of just think of the Islanders as like this bigger, more physical team. When they are playing well, like, that's what they look like. They look, because they are all over you on the forecheck. You don't have a second to breathe. Your defensemen are playing a lot of the game with their face 2 inches away from the glass, like making a pass along the boards and just hoping that their winger is there. And guess what? That winger is going to have to deal with a forechecker or get hit. And I think one of the, like, most, like, you have to say, like, oh, you hate seeing players get hurt or whatever, but it was really hard not to, when you saw the hit from Matt Martin on Jacob Trouba, like, that is that the Islanders, like, right? Like, they, he was, it was a very clean, perfectly timed hit that ended up basically turning that kind of game around, or like was a good footnote in that game. Was that was a big hit. It costs the Rangers a defenseman. That changes the lineup. The Rangers aren't all that deep. That, yet, yeah, Adam Fox is awesome, but, and Keandre Miller looks great too. But behind them, you're talking about, okay, without Jacob Trouba, they got to give Anthony Boteto and Brendan Smith, who for some reason turns into one of the, you know, he's basically Bobby Orr when the Islanders play the Rangers for some reason, because he's terrible everywhere else. But you're feeding those guys big minutes. Like, those are the type of things that when the Islanders are going, like, they're smothering. They love to say they're above the puck and they're forechecking, and it's visceral. It's like a very, you can feel it when they're motoring, and the other teams could feel it too. Like, they, I'm sure that Claude Giroux and the Flyers are sick and tired of being chased down by Brock Nelson and stuff like they, I'm sure, like, that, or, and their fans are probably like, I wish we had a player like that, who, he's big, he's not only is Brock isn't like the most physical guy, but he's big and he uses his size and he's very crafty on back checks and stuff. Like, he's a great player. Like, he's a great second line center. And when the Islanders are playing well, those guys get elevated because everybody's doing their job, and not everybody's doing their job right now. There's some serious issues with a couple of players, and we talked a lot about them. And you can't scapegoat them, because, like, the island, if you want to blame Kyle Clutterbuck or Scott Mayfield for the Islanders' downtick in form, it's wrong. Like, yeah, they're not playing well, but I didn't see really anybody playing well against the Capitals on Saturday night. And the game before that, sure, there were more players playing well than there were on Saturday, but it wasn't everybody. So it's not just going to come down to two guys, but when those guys, or if Noah Dobson and Andy Green are caught on a bad shift, when the rest of the team isn't playing well, those moments become much more dangerous, because they're not going to get bailed out by Matt Barzal and Jordan Eberle dominating and turning a great shift into a goal at the other end and plays like that. Like, so this is really the issue. And, like, we've now talked ad nauseum about it, but there are like things that the coaching staff can do, but if they don't do it, it shouldn't be the end of the world. Like, this team is still good enough to win games with, they've shown it. Like, they've dominated teams with Leo Komarov playing first line minutes. Like playing, they put in some of their best performances this season with Leo Komarov playing more 5-on-5 minutes than Matt Barzal. So it's not like that. That's what it tells you, that this team is good enough, no matter who's in the lineup, to really step on teams' throats. So we can all wish list a lineup as much as we want, but like those things probably just won't come. And if Leo Komarov is taking on Brad Marchand in round one of the NHL playoffs, like you're just gonna have to live with it and hope that the team that Leo led out against the Capitals when they won 8-4 is the one that shows up. And we can talk about it all day long, but we just won't know. We can get clues and we can get hints by the way that they play down the next couple of weeks, but we're not going to know until, we get closer. So you just hope that maybe they did take their foot off the gas a little bit. I think, it could be the case. Like that Ranger game was as much a de facto playoff clinching game as close to one as you can get. And yes, they're not in yet. And knock on wood, they don't lose their next, go on a 9-game losing streak here. But like that the point is like that maybe that is what it is. It was a little bit of a let up. That's the best case scenario at this point, is that they took their foot off the gas a little bit, and that's it. Like that they'll hear it from Barry Trotz and Lane Lambert, who I don't know if there's very many more people like that would frighten me more to make mad than Lane Lambert. He looks like Martin Scorsese cast him. If Martin Scorsese knew who Lane Lambert is, he'd be in a lot of movies. Right. He'd be a strong, quiet kind of enforcer guy who's backing up Joe Pesci or something in Scorsese's movies, because he just has that look about him. And honestly, Trotz has like a little bit of like a godfather kind of look to him, especially when he got the three-piece suit going.
Yeah.
So like
now you got me thinking about a Scorsese hockey movie.
Yeah.
Which would be kind of awesome. It may be like 6 hours long, but
yeah, of course. Yeah. I don't what I don't know what you want to call it, but you could see like those Barry being like the anti-hero, and Lane Lambert being the guy that he's like putting ice picks in places you don't want ice picks to go. So it's like, but the point, I don't like they're getting they're I'm sure those guys are leaning into this team for the way that they've been playing, just like they should be in a Martin Scorsese movie when their earners aren't earning enough money. So it's like it's hopefully you just hope that these next two games give you much more of an indication that things are turning around. And like we should keep mentioning that they're not going to shoot 5% for the rest of the season. Like that, if they do, they're no matter how well they play, they're not going to win games. So like you just hope that number ticks up.
I hope so. It better. I mean, because that's pretty bad. Or at least the Penguins and Caps start ticking down a little bit. Marty Scorsese seems like the guy to me who has been in New York, obviously, his whole life and has experienced a ton of stuff, but has probably never watched a baseball game from start to finish. Like, you know what I'm saying? Or a basketball game. And he'll be like, oh, are the Yankees playing today? Yeah, Marty, they kind of play every day in the summertime. Oh, all right. Yeah. Who are they playing? And then you say, the Tampa Bay Rays. And he's like, oh, and meanwhile, it's clear that he's never heard of this team and has no idea they exist. You know, that goes for any sport. The Nets are playing? Yeah. Oh, that's great. Well, who are they playing? Oh, the Memphis Grizzlies. Oh, okay. You know, oh, cool. Like that, you know. Anyway,
it would be interesting to hear him talk about the Islanders too. Like if you just showed him a picture, because Anders Lee is a very distinct looking individual,
right?
Like he's another one that if you were casting a hockey movie, like Anders Lee would definitely be in it. And then you got Ilya Sorokin, who couldn't look more like a Russian KGB like rocket scientist if he tried. So it's like there is like a very you could cast. And then the Islanders are also, they have to be. Losing Derek Brassard hurt, but they're probably the most handsome team to a man in the NHL.
Well, I was going to say between Bo and Pajot, you've got the two, every team's got to have those two French Canadian guys that just talk French to each other the whole time. Like those are those two guys. Like that's exactly what they would be as well. Yeah. And then, obviously the Godfather coach and then the hot young center Barzell, you know, that kind of thing. So, yeah, I mean, it's possible. Now you got me thinking about this. I got to check this. You know, we got to make this happen. Scorsese. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you think Leo DiCaprio ended up at an island.
All right.
You know, and yeah. I don't think he seemed to have a good time. He put his hat over his eyes. And,
yeah.
I mean, it was at the Barclays Center. How sad is that? Like, you know, you'd be like, oh, Leo, man, you should be sitting with Ralph Macchio at the Coliseum.
I would think that their celebrity game will definitely be increased once UBS Arena is complete. I would think that we're going to see a lot of cool celebrities because they'll be like, you know, tied with Oakview Group and like all the musicians and stuff. So I have a feeling we're going
to
see a lot of musicians.
I want to be the guy to check the credentials at the door because like I love our crew of like C-listers. I think I want Macchio to be the ringleader. Whenever I tell people like who are sports fans and they don't really know much about hockey or don't pay attention and they don't know anything about the Islanders, I'd be like, oh yeah, like Ralph Macchio is a Islander fan. They think it's like the funniest, coolest like thing ever. And the more I think about it, the more I'm like, oh, God, like I love that. Like that is just so stereotypical. Like Long Island, 80s Long Island, that this guy is a huge Islander fan and still watches games. And he's like a guy, like he should be on if the Islanders win the Stanley Cup, like he should have his own float. Like it should just be Ralph Macchio. Maybe he should be holding the cup maybe and on the float because it's just awesome that he's an Islander fan. Yeah. But yeah, like DiCaprio, maybe we'll let back in, but
yeah,
I'll be the guy checking the other ones. Like I don't want to see like Brad Paisley show up.
Yeah, well, I was gonna say, I feel like Oakview has a thing with Lady Gaga. I think that's like one of their big acts. So, but I feel like an Islanders game at UBS Arena is the only place where Ralph Macchio will get a bigger pop from the audience than Lady Gaga would. Like, they put Lady Gaga on the screen, she gets big applause. People are like, more people probably be like, "Holy shit, what is Lady Gaga doing here? Does she have something more important to be at?" But like, if Ralph Macchio is on the screen, that whole place is going to go completely bananas. Yeah,
there was like a real fun era in the Coliseum's history where Charles Wong just was like bringing his boys to the game. Yeah. Like all this, like the Colin Powell thing always cracked me up. But also, on one of the last games ever at the Coliseum, or the first, you know, last game ever, I think it was during the Capital Series, like all of a sudden Hideki Matsui showed up on the Jumbotron, and it's always the first reaction isn't like at a Ranger game where like people are like, oh, like there's Tom Hanks. We got to like clap for Tom Hanks. It's like, oh yeah. It's like, holy shit. What the hell? What? Is Hideki? Yeah. Like you hit the guy next to you. Like, what's Hideki Matsui doing at the Islander game? Like that.
And then everybody's going to their buddy next to them. Like, dude, Matsui's here. No, come on. No, look. And then it's like, so there's like the delayed reaction of the crowd.
And it speaks to the Islander fan base too, that like, we're talking about this, there's going to be a lot of people listening to this who remember the Hideki Matsui game. Whereas like at a Ranger game, or if you want to go to like a Leafs game, like yeah, there no Ranger fans are going to remember a game because Joe Pesci was there. Like
yeah, Liam Neeson is there all the time. Yeah, like, exactly. Who the hell cares? Like
yeah, for us it's just like holy shit.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
Look, what Matsui's here.
I don't know how we end up going from Marty Scorsese to arena celebrity appearances, but I'm glad we did because this, you know, we're coming to the end here, and so this is a perfect spot for me to make our plea. I think you and I are the only people in the Islanders fanosphere or whatever you want to call it to not get invited to the construction site of UBS Arena and get the tour. They had a whole big thing going on. Like, you know, you could tell because like all the same people you follow are all posting pictures from inside the arena and everybody's got the hard hat on. Andrew Gross had the hard hat on. Look good on him. You know, like everybody had the, you know, getting the tour. They have two seats there. So like you can see like where the seats are going to look. So everybody had the same picture, the same two seats all over. So this is my thing, Islanders. And if anybody at the Islanders is listening and can make this happen, I'll take a day off of work. I don't care. My boss knows. He's cool with it. I'll take a day off of work. I want to come out to the island and look at the construction. I know nothing about building buildings. I sit in front of a computer all day at work, but it would be pretty cool. I doubt this is ever going to happen, but I'm glad we got on this topic and I'm glad I can mention this because I've noticed that a lot of people are getting tours of this place and it's not us. And that bothers me. So
was that tour with the new tours where they to announce, I like, cause they pop up randomly. And like, I'm like, what?
Yeah.
There's no like rhyme or reason. Was this one because they made like the Heineken? Are you only going to be able to buy Heineken at UBS Arena?
I mean, that's official beer sponsor.
That's the way it sounds. It's only going to be Heineken, which I think is, it's kind of funny. Like you got this, a Swiss bank sponsoring the arena. Then you got the was it Belgian or German beer?
German beer, yeah.
German beer. So it's very, we got Mark Streit and Tom Kuhnackel and
well, Heineken USA, I'm sure, has other like beer labels, right? Like yeah. there's other yeah, like yeah. you know, Budweiser isn't just Bud, it's like right. 50 different kinds of beer. So
I would like to go with some alumni that we love too. Like they should be touring with, like, you know, Sean Bates should be at that arena.
I was thinking too, like, it's funny you bring that up too, because I was thinking, like, how many like locker room construction sites has Bob Nystrom been to for the Islanders? Like, you know, because they renovated the Coliseum a couple of times. He was at the Barclays Center one where they were doing that. Now he's at this one. Like, he's seen probably close to half a dozen locker rooms built for the Islanders since he retired. And I don't know. He seems, I mean, I guess he's got nothing much better to do, and that's cool by him. I mean, it's really, oh, and that's another reminder too. So the Islanders have a new official podcast now, and it's called Talkin' Isles, and it's with Greg Picker and Corey Wright, who does a lot of the Islanders you know, digital content that you read that comes out on the website. And it's really cool. Like, they talk to Nystrom. They're going to have alumni on, and I guess people around the Isles. And they talked to Nystrom for the first episode, and, like, you know, I mean, we've all heard Bob Nystrom talk now for forever. And but he told some cool stories. Like, did you know that Bob Nystrom, when he first played in the AHL, he wore glasses? Like, have you ever seen a picture of Bob Nystrom, like a young Bob Nystrom, wearing glasses while playing hockey?
No, I haven't. No, that's awesome.
Yeah, that like blew my mind. And apparently blew Corey and Greg's minds too, because they were like, wait, what? Like, they asked him about that. And he talked about how he found out he got drafted. Obviously, you know, 1972, there wasn't like a big to-do on TV. And he was at a bar after a game with his friends. And like the bartender's like, call for Nystrom, you know, like from The Simpsons. And so he picks up the phone and it's his dad. And he's like, hey, you've been drafted by the New York Islanders. And he's like, great. Who are they? Like, I had no idea. So that's obviously a much better story when Bob Nystrom tells
the,
it. But,
the team in the Scorsese movies?
Yeah, exactly. So, but check it out. I don't know if anybody else saw it, if you haven't heard it yet, but I guess it's going to be like a weekly thing. But it was really cool. Like, I got to tell you, I mean, at first you're like, oh, all right, that's cool, Bob Nystrom. Of course, it's got to be Nystrom. But he told a bunch of stories that I know I hadn't heard before. So, I mean, that's cool. Like, you want to hear those kinds of things. I don't know how that glasses thing kind of flew under the radar for the last 40 years. But now I got to see a picture of this, because that to me is just unbelievable. And then he lost him, and they're like, yeah, you know, the contact lenses were a new thing back then, but I had to try them. And I'm like, okay, sure. Why not? But
I think one funny thing about like us as Islander fans, and the dynasty obviously will always be the pinnacle. And I missed it by a long time. Like, I don't have any real connection to him, like, physically or whatever, because I wasn't alive. But the fact that they've been around and, like, come basically get brought into every fabric, as they should, of the of like the organization since then, it's crazy, because you just surprised me with that story when like I said I wasn't alive for the heyday of the dynasty, but I you know all these like stories like secondhand from, you know, them going out, and you know where they hung out, and you'd hear from, especially like when I was bartending, like you talk to like an old timer and be like, oh yeah, like I remember when I would be out like this place in Levittown and the Islanders would show up on like Wednesday nights to play darts or whatever, and like just stuff like that. And it's nice, but it's nice to like that we've stopped with like the kind of like surface level stuff, and we're starting to appreciate the like the cult icon style like ness of that group. And because what it's done is also like been able to show, like, it's been able to allow the team, which, and they've done such a better job of this over the last like 4 years, of like of elevating the other alumni. Like for a long time, it was like you'd hear about the dynasty, and you'd hear them talk about how every time in, you know, they went to overtime in the playoffs, they'd all say like, oh, like I'm going to be the guy. So we've kind of like moved past those stories, and we're into these ones, like of the glasses, or you see the video Butch Goring doing his like disco moves at it's like the talent show, and we're starting to see more stuff like that. And that's allowing like us to celebrate the hockey exploits of Kenny Johnson and stuff like that too, because I think for when they do move to UBS Arena, like I hope that is still going to be a huge part of the experience, like we are going to see, you know, Lubo Visnovsky back at, you know, on Long Island. We're going to see those kind of guys like Kip Miller or Keith O'Coin or whoever, like those guys, hopefully they come back and see like where this team has come, because like, honestly, those players are pretty important. Like they're nowhere near as important as a dynasty, but like those teams and being able to contribute like in for a franchise that had so many negative seasons, if you were a part of a team that had a moment, you're incredibly important to it. Like you're incredibly important to this fan base. And like you said, like if the Islanders showed Lady Gaga on the Jumbotron after they showed Roman Hamrlich, like Roman Hamrlich would just get a huge, huge ovation and everyone would be sitting back down and be like, oh, I got to get back up again for Lady Gaga. So like, and I think the point is that like those guys, Greg and Corey, are so good about knowing like who these cult icons are outside of just like, and like they know how to now kind of handle, get more out of the dynasty guys than just the kind of cliche at this point stories of guys in the locker room saying like, oh, I'm going to be the guy, and getting into like the Long Island fabric of them. And also, while also being able to elevate the, you know, Sean Bates and Yanni Ninemas of the world.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to more of it. I mean, he does tell that overtime story too, but, I'm looking forward to more of it, cause it was really cool. So, I'm sure the usual suspects are all around the corner. Gillies, LaFontaine is always there. But I think that they're going to probably, I mean, now that since the alumni nights have started, you know, they've rounded up all of these guys, whatever contact information. And so, you know, they brought a lot of guys. Nobody was, I mean, you know, we talked about Peter Mika at the time he was there. So, I mean, I have a feeling that there's going to be some sort of like blanket invitation to like, if you want to come here, you know, the seat's on us, or there's a suite that's like designed for just alumni. I could see that happening. And so, you know, you're looking at a situation where like every game there could be some Islander, you know, ghost of Islanders past up in a suite somewhere, and he's on the Jumbotron, and you know, we can see how it goes. But you know, Bates will definitely be there for sure. Yeah. we know that. And again, the usual suspects.
It really does make you proud though to be part of this group when you know they show Richard Park or Jeff Tambellini on the Jumbotron. Like they will, the roof will get blown off.
Yeah, oh
like,
yeah.
That's what's one of my favorite parts about this fan base. It's like, yeah, like you can make Jeff Tambellini feel like Bobby Orr for 2 seconds. And we will, like if he shows back up, if Jeff Tambellini shows up at an Islander game and they show him on the scoreboard, people will blow the roof off for him.
Man, Richard Park. And this reminds me, I had another podcast idea that we talked about that. We gotta get on that. I'm just so lazy sometimes. I don't know. We gotta work on that, but it would be just random Islanders. We just have discussions about them, but that's another show for another time. Literally another entire podcast for another time, but we'll get on that anyway. All right. Well, I'm glad we had this discussion because it was a good palate cleanser from the anger and anxiety from the beginning.
Yeah.
So, thanks to Marty Scorsese for leading us down this path.
God, it would be funny to see him like, yeah, like you said, just watching an Islander game with that guy, being like,
he probably, right, I assume he'd be criticizing like camera placements and stuff for the most part. Like, why is the camera here? Why
would you love Butch? I think Butch, he would love to, like, if I would actually, that's what it is. Like, you'd want to watch the game before you brought him to a game, you'd want to watch one on TV with him, and you'd be like, he'd be like, all right. That Butch Goring guy's great. He's perfect, like caricature for like a Western Canadian guy calling a hockey game. Yeah, he's crazy. He's just like the right amount of crazy. He's perfect. He'd be another great casted character for especially, you know, with just the accent and the way he reacts to bad calls and stuff. So yeah, you got to watch it with him on this side of the screen before you actually bring him to the game, because I don't know if he would have a terrible time at the game. It's an absolutely terrible time.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, especially the Coliseum.
He would love the Long Island accents. I think he'd love to hear people make jokes about the bathroom line and stuff like that. And but outside of that, he would spend most of his time, I guess, on the concourse. Then he would. You'd be like, where is he? Like the game started. He's like, oh no, he's listening to people talk on the bathroom line and taking notes.
And I just can't picture him like eating a cold pretzel, sitting in this cramped little seat, watching an Islanders Sabres game.
You'd have to bring him to the guy who sells the hot pretzels in the parking lot afterwards. Because once again, he's like, oh, another character. Great.
Yeah. They're definitely not hurting for characters. That's for sure. It's not unlike Goodfellas in that way for sure. All right. Well, this has been a lot of fun. Hopefully the games this week against the Capitals and Rangers are equally as fun. but more productive in the sense that the Islanders get points out of them. That's the important thing. Okay. Where can everybody find you on Twitter?
The Big Lebowski with two E's.
Follow Mike at the Big Lebowski with two E's. Read his work at Action Network. Read Lighthouse Hockey every single day for your most up-to-date Islanders news and discussion. You can follow all of our podcasts at LHH Podcasts on Twitter. You can follow me at Culture of Losing if you want. We thank you for listening, and we'll be back sometime next week. And hopefully we'll be in a better mood, at least to start anyway. And we don't have to talk about Marty Scorsese to put us in a better one. But we'll talk to you guys then. All right. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Phone is ringing. Oh my God. Ad rocks down with the Ioni. Listen to the shit, cause both of them is bony. Gotta do it like this, like Chachi and Joni.
Cause she's the cheese and I'm the macaroni, so why?